Blog Talk Radio.
Of David Duenas. I'm your co-host, Steve K9 Kim, and joining me, as always, from the beautiful city of San Francisco, Golden Gate, Gabe Montoya. Gabe, good Monday to you.
Good Monday to you, sir. I hope the weather down there is as great as it was up here today, man. What a great way to spend some time off, but not a lot of fights to get to, but there were some memorable moments, I guess, this weekend.
Yes, indeed. If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 15 to 20 minutes, 347-215-7598. Once again, that number, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question or a comment via Twitter, you could do so at SteveUCNLive or at Gabriel_Montoya. And, folks, we usually go 90 minutes, but let's face it, lean times in the sport of boxing, and really doesn't start up till March, although we do have a notable fight this weekend from Monte Carlo. We can go up to 90 minutes, and we'll go at least 60. It's up to you for callers. Again, that number, 347-215-7598. Let's get started with round number one. It's the return of Triple G, making his annual appearance on Monte Carlo, live on HBO Saturday afternoon for the WBA middleweight title. Gennady Golovkin takes on Martin Murray. Golovkin is 31-0, 28 knockouts, and Martin Murray 29-1-1, 12 stoppages. Gabe, what does it say about Martin Murray, who is arguably the second or third best middleweight in the world, and according to our friend JP, who looks at these boxing odds for entertainment purposes only, and now this fight is up to 35-1.
35-1. I think what it just says is, I think that people really are understanding who Triple G is, and it's not about, so much that Martin Murray isn't that good. I think that it's that Golovkin goes through people so easily, and I know Rubio wasn't really supposed to be a guy that was going to be a problem, but it's not so much who you beat, it's how you beat them. Added to which, Triple G's got that amateur background, a very pleasing style, and just ridiculous power and a work ethic to go along with it. He's very active, and when he's not fighting, he's training. I think all of that equals what you're seeing on the betting pool. But you got to look at Murray. He's a durable guy, but he's got 12 knockouts. In 31 fights, he's 32 years old. Not the hardest hitter in the world. His claim to fame is getting robbed against Sergio Martinez. But other than that, I mean, he's a durable, worthy contender, but not exactly somebody that you're afraid of. And there's no amount of his game where you go, well, if Triple D does this wrong, better look out because he's going to be knockout number 13. I don't think anybody's saying that. That said, I think it's a quality fight. I think it's going to be a good fight. Murray's going to bring it. But he's not bringing anything that Triple G hasn't seen. So the odds, I think 35 is crazy, but the 20-1 sounded about right. But what do I know? I'm not an odds maker.
Martin Murray is one of these guys best known for his blemishes. If he got a couple of breaks or if things were on the level, he could easily be 31-0 in the linear middleweight champion of the world. I thought he beat Sergio Martinez, but let's face it, he let up, and his trainer coaxed him instead of going to the whip after knocking down Maravilla in the eighth round in Buenos Aires. He should have won that title in Argentina. He simply wasn't going to get that decision. And impossibilities are a lot in boxing, specifically beating Felix Sturm in Germany during his prime, and he got a draw there in a fight that most people thought that he won. Martin Murray, I think, is a steady and durable guy. There's nothing particularly special about him, Gabe. But it goes back to your point that this is a guy who might be the second or third best fighter in the division currently. He's probably more accomplished than anyone Golovkin has fought thus far during, let's say, the last third of his career. But there is a Tyson-esque feel to it. Let's face it, the odds makers are telling us this fight is a blowout, and it very well might be. But, Gabe, this certainly has a distinctive feel of someone that I grew up watching in high school, and it's the same situation. Iron Mike Tyson, when Tyson was busting through guys like Tony Tubbs, Tony Tucker, Trevor Burbick, all these other names, you knew what the outcome was going to be. And quite frankly, Gabe, whether you hated him or loved him, you didn't give a damn.
I wasn't the biggest Tyson fan. You know, to be honest, I kind of liked him more in his comeback. And then that was kind of ill-fated. But still, the way he was blowing through guys, I don't know. Maybe I was just a hater even back then. But you're right. Like, I didn't miss a Tyson fight. It was an event. And that's what Triple G brings. I think it's exclusive to punchers, explosive guys that maybe they're going to get hit a little bit. They're definitely going to be aggressive. And more often than not, they just get somebody out there in highlight reel fashion. That Triple G is a nice, smiley guy outside the ring, learned a little bit of Spanish, and just seems to really get it, the whole promotion end of this, and being exciting and accessible, part of the game. Every time he fights, it's an event, and you want to see it. Even though it's Monte Carlo, maybe in a different era, we would be like, no big deal, we're going to miss it, but I can't wait to see him on HBO. Now in the new radio era, we can catch him. I think this fight is what it is. I don't think it's a stay busy. I think this is a legit title challenge, and it's going to be one you can point to, and say that this is the mark of quality because of that experience. But I think there's a big difference between negating the speed of a Sergio Martinez the way Murray did with his jab and actually being fast, which Martin Murray will never be accused of. And I think he's almost kind of similar to Triple G's style. It's kind of no frills, boxer puncher, kind of basic classic style, but he's missing the power. And I also think there's some of the little subtle things that Triple G does that few other guys do, the way he's able to keep range after getting it and kind of lock in on you, his combination punching and his ability to hurt you while off balance. All those things I think equal a Triple G knockout, and that'll be a hell of a feather in his cap, being able to stop Martin Murray and be the first guy to do it. I think he does it in 9 rounds. I don't know. It's called
Gabe,
optimistic.
I mentioned this in my article today. It's one of those fights that if you are who we think you are and you want us to crown you over the course of time, this is the type of guy that not only you beat, you have to dominate. Style points matter as it relates to Gennady Golovkin, whether that's fair or not. Sometimes winning isn't everything. It is how indeed you do it. And I'm not looking for just will he stop Martin Murray, who's never been off his feet from what I know of and never really been significantly hurt. I want to see if he can do it by the mid-rounds. And if he's able to do that, I think that in itself is the extra feather in his cap. Keep in mind this name, Omar Amari. He's the last fighter to go the distance to see the route against Golovkin, and that was an 8-rounder in 2008. Since then, he has notched 18 straight stoppages. And Gabe, one of the ways great fighters, or supposedly great fighters, lose is they beat themselves with complacency. And I'll say this, I went up to Big Bear about 2.5-3 weeks ago to watch Golovkin go to work at the Summit. Gabe, this is a guy that is truly focused, and I don't see any complacency. I don't see any letdown. This is still, when he stepped into that gym with Abel Sanchez and his host of other fighters who are hungry, young guys, fledgling prospects, even now, nobody matches the work ethic or the energy of Gennady Golovkin.
That's the mark of the champion. I mean, you were there. I was there towards, I guess, the peak of the popularity, but I think you're probably there for Pacquiao's, beginnings and his peak and still now. And there's just a difference. I remember seeing Edwin Valero work out. There's a difference between next-level guys that are kind of physical freaks, but also that have that internal thing where they just work out, they just do everything at 11, at just a higher level than everybody else around them. It's one of the things I notice up here You know, there's some good trainers, some fledgling trainers. Undisputed is one of the few places, and obviously like Andre Ward's gym, where champions actually work out. And you can just see the difference in gyms that don't have that kind of centerpiece guy, where all the other guys can look and go, that's what being a champion looks like. That's the level I need to get to. That's a rare thing. And I imagine that's what Golovkin brings. It's why, like, all the other guys that work out with him, like Joel Diaz Jr., they speak of him almost reverentially because they know what he does to prepare, and the fight is almost the easy part.
If you want to call in, we'll take your calls in about 10 minutes here. That number, 347-215-7598. This is Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya on the next round on the Leave It in the Ring radio network. Gabe, the fight was not announced at the All-Star Game, as many speculated and hoped for. Floyd Mayweather telling TNT's David Aldridge that not only is the fight not done, no one has signed a contract. Gabe, I'm beginning to think, listening to Floyd, that our founding fathers didn't sign the Declaration of Independence. Here's what I know, and I told you last week that for the first time ever, that I was optimistic and I felt things were trending up, and that some of my sources who had been extreme skeptics of this fight were finally saying, Steve, I think this might actually happen. Now, Gabe, I believe Floyd is playing a game. I believe he loves to troll people. He loves to be in control. He loves to play God with his own message. I don't think yesterday or last night was a death knell to this fight. But I will say this. If you want a full 8-week camp, Gabe, this is the absolute drop deadline in terms of making that fight for May 2nd.
I think there's no question, you know, I also wonder, you know, well, maybe I shouldn't speculate about drug use out loud, but, you know, the testing doesn't begin until, at least traditionally, until the press tour is over, like the day of or the day after. You know, I don't know what their stipulations are, but this has always been about control. You know, it's controlling the length of the training camp, controlling, you know, who makes what. At this point, yeah, I do kind of wonder, I mean, are they really – there's a lot of people – I'm sure you've heard this too. This fight sells itself, you know. If any fight could be announced on short notice, it's this one. But why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
For the biggest fight in history, why would you want to take that gamble that you're maybe wrong? I don't understand
Gabe, especially when you know the numbers being thrown out there, you need to have at least 2.5 million pay-per-view buys, even at that $100 pay-per-view price tag that you wrote of a couple of months ago. Logistically, Freddie Roach says, Steve, I want an 8-week camp. Well, what I was told when they met in Miami at that basketball game and had that clandestine meeting that was secretly taped by Mayweather in Miami, that they were going to do one press conference, either in L.A. or New York, then you figure you got to do some photo shoots so you could market this doggone thing. And then after a couple of days of travel, one guy goes to Las Vegas, the other guy goes to Wildcard, and you begin the process. Gabe, going back to what you said about the $5 million penalty that Pacquiao wants to put for a positive drug test, this is the irony of irony. If you would have said to me 4.5, 5 years ago that it was Manny that was so insistent on this, I would have given you 100-1 odds. Gabe, quite frankly, is this the Ariza effect?
I think it's probably the Ariza effect, but I think it also goes back to the defamation case. I think there were things learned learned there, and I think Pacquiao's not taking any chances. It goes both ways. And further to this point, I was kind of wondering this in the last few weeks as we learned that Tim Smith and I guess now Lem Satterfield are working for Al Haymon now. They've left journalism and they've moved to the other side. They're publicists. They're working in a PR capacity. I think that really changes the light of that surrounds those emails that Tim Smith reported on that were never really produced, about apparently Pacquiao's people asking what happens in the case of a drug test or a positive drug test. I think we have to go back and revisit that story, see about the way it was reported, and I'd like to see those emails because
yes.
I guarantee you they were innocent, and if they were asking about it, they were simply asking about results management, which is I think, at the core of all of this drug stuff, from what's going on in the UFC to, you know, the reason why VADA isn't widely used and was kind of their name was ground through the mud, in my opinion, by Richard Schaefer and Keith Kaiser behind the scenes. All of that is results management. Everybody wants to control the results. So this is also my question about if this is true, but Manny asking about this $5 million penalty, is that a response to a stipulation in the results management where the commission doesn't find out in case of a drug test?
And for the record, and this is a subject for another day, Lam Satterfield is not working PR. He's actually writing stories for the PBC website, from what I've been told. Gabe, this much is known. Lucas Matisse and Ruslan Provodnikov, Banner Promotions and Golden Boy, they have put this fight together. This fight's going to happen. Originally, they wanted March 28th at the StubHub Center, which fit together, like I like to say, like peanut butter and jelly. If there's ever a fight and a venue that needed to be together, it was this one. But there's a little problem. Someone out there has a hold on this date, but doesn't have a fight announced and has not even made a finalization of the main event. Yes, that would be the Al Haymon crew. So the bottom line is very simple. I think by either Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to know where Matisse Provodnikov is and just when it's going to happen. I've been told that Golden Boy is making a last-ditch effort to the AEG Corporation, which runs the Staples and the StubHub Center, to try to get that venue, because I believe the fans deserve this fight. I believe that's where the fight does the best. However, if that is not worked out, Gabe, there's a chance this fight may not only move to mid-April, it could land up in venues such as Miami, Florida, or Verona, New York. Now, my question is this. Why don't the venues and the commissions wake up and start really protecting the interests of the public by making people do the right things? And all these people, they want to anoint Al Haymon as the savior of boxing, that he's doing good for boxing. Gabe, is this good for boxing, booking venues just so other people can't have superior fight cards in them?
I would say to those people, name me five fights that Al Haymon's given you that boxing absolutely couldn't live without and benefited from. I don't think they could give me two. But you could probably name five fights that he's blocked that would have been great for the sport that we all would have enjoyed. All of this stuff makes me really wonder, because, you know, we had the Boxing Promoters Association of America, and you look for a second like, hey, maybe the sport's going to start working with each other. If the power brokers start talking, that could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. It ended up being a non-thing. It didn't happen at all. They can't even update their website.
Ironically, a lot of those people that were in that original promoters union are now basically eating at the Haymon trough. You know who they are.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And so I kind of wonder, though, as Al has scooped those people up and is trying to monopolize the sport, if the sport needs to go back and take a look at itself, like the remaining people, and say maybe we do need, you know, I don't want to sound like Teddy Atlas with the National Commission, but maybe we do need to organize this thing in a way and come up with some bylaws for the sport so people can't just, you know, grab an arena. We don't have a fight card there, and, you know, we don't even know if it's better than the one that we're blocking, but screw it. We want to take over the sport. I think the sport needs some regulation and some protection and some uniformity so this stuff can stop happening. I think that it's incumbent on the other three people to not just, or the, you know, like top-ranked Golden Boy main events, to not just think, well, I'm just going to put out better products, better versions of what I've been doing, and that'll stave it off. I think more needs to be done.
Gabe, what's happening now is, and as a reporter that thrives on information, for me, information is currency. I'm in the business of information. I think a lot of these promoters and networks now are going to be very secretive in terms of when they want to have a date, where they're going to have a date, and who's going to fight. And quite frankly, I don't blame them, because there's a lot of bogeys being thrown, a lot of booby traps. And my point is this. I believe in competition. That's the capitalistic way. What's going on to me, it seems like anti-competition and collusion. And listen, I want fans to have the best fights possible, that have the best experience, that can actually really support the sport. That's something I've been a huge advocate of. And if it means me holding off information and giving it to the public so be it, because I simply don't want to be part of the problem. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, and let's go through some tweets. And on this day, we have to go to the president, Andrew V. Kennedy, first. He says, even though the plans were known, are you guys still surprised by the amount of fighters slash time buys Heyman has accumulated? Gabe, I can honestly say, no, I am not.
No, I'm not surprised. I think once it went into full effect, and I think even, you know, the Oscar kind of waking up and thwarting the plans at Golden Boy, I think that made them kind of hit the eject button and really kick things into overdrive. So, no, I'm not surprised at all. You know, I think there'll be more. You see CBS had a time buy this weekend that was kind of dreadful. But I think, you know, we're going to see Al over there. We're going to see more networks. You know, no, I'm not surprised at all. I think what I am surprised at is how – well, I'm not even surprised by this, but I think it's all kind of good in a sense, because it just shows where the holes are in boxing's system, that it can just be kind of taken over and privatized in a way so easily. And there was a guy that told me this years ago. He was trying to sell me on doing a show for him, and he talked about it. He was a lawyer. He now works in politics. But he basically said boxing could be completely litigated, and you could almost take over the sport just through litigation. And you're watching Al Heyman do that. And having these fighters kind of sign their futures away, it's interesting, though, that you don't see a lot of fighters complaining, or any fighters complaining about Al's system. Not a lot of people trying
yet
to get out of the contract and leave yet.
It's
that'll
early.
Be the real key.
It's the honeymoon phase. Let's see where we are in 6 to 12 months. And the word I keep using is sustainability. And the latest fighter that I've heard of to jump ship to Al Heyman is Edner Cherry, 130-pound contender. I believe he made a financial deal where he was released by Russell Peltz, and now he's under the Heyman umbrella. Here's one from Gaddy Fan. Do you think Heyman will go out of his way to schedule cards on NBC and NBC Sports Network the same night as HBO to hurt their ratings? Gabe, it wouldn't be the most far-fetched idea, would it?
It would actually be pretty smart on his part, you know. Not everybody has HBO. You know, I mean, the disparity between HBO and regular networks is quite a bit in terms of how many people watch. So, you know, the audience that you're capturing, I think it would be very smart. You're trying to convince everybody that you're the only game in town, and that you're the legit game. And, you know, you've got Marv Albert. You've got all these, you know, luminaries, you know, Sugar Ray out there. People do remember that face. And he's, you know, he's a stamp of greatness. So, you know, yeah. You know, and I think those are good fights. And if you're competing with listening to Andre Ward and Jim Lampley, you know, maybe Marv Albert and Sugar Ray Leonard might be better. I don't know. You know, we'll see what the packaging is like, you know. It's all kind of early, you know. But, yeah, I think that would be a smart plan if I'm Heyman. I mean, it's not like he hasn't
boxing
been aggressive yet.
Reality. How long do you think Roach has worked Floyd's game plan? How much does Ariza know that he can tell Floyd? Gabe, there's no doubt about it. If there's anyone that wants this fight, it's Freddie Roach. And he's told me this for months. I mean, I'm telling you, he is more excited about the possibility of this fight happening than for anyone that I can recall since Manny Pacquiao, Oscar De La Hoya. He said, Steve, he literally just told me, Steve, I've studied hours upon hours upon hours of Floyd Mayweather. He looks at it as a great challenge for him as a trainer to try to figure out this Rubik's Cube. And how much can Ariza really tell Floyd? Who knows? I mean, what can he really say? Like, this is the supplements that I gave him? This is what time we took the Ariza shakes? I really don't know what insights Alex Ariza can tell Floyd Mayweather, Gabe.
Yeah, I think a great question, and in all my observances, you've had more than I have. How many times do you see Freddie and Alex sitting in the corner quietly bullshitting? I've never really seen it.
The last,
you know,
couple of camps, Gabe, they barely talked.
They barely.
I mean,
talked.
I can honestly tell you that they
them.
Barely spoke to each other. It was a very, very awkward situation. That at least the last two camps, when Alex Ariza would walk in the gym, I mean, literally, it was radio silence from everybody. It was very awkward to even be in there and feel that atmosphere.
Yeah. No, there's no doubt. I mean, I remember, think my last media day, which was before the last Marquez fight. And that was the day Alex chased me around the parking lot or pursued me. And then, like, I went up there. I always think that was great. Like, here's this thing happening in the. It's kind of indicative of a lot of the boxing media that nobody caught it. They were all too busy upstairs. But Alex was literally sitting in the corner, not taking interviews. He took one interview, and with Marcos Villegas. And then I pretty much just watched him just literally sit in the corner, kind of by himself, nobody really talking to him, and all that chaos of a Pacquiao media day happening. And he had gone from, you know, several camps before, taking every interview he could. Everybody was all over him. He seemed friendly. He went real dark, real fast, in a hurry. And I tend to wonder about what he could tell them. But I would say this, that, you know, knowing what I know about the first negotiations and why Floyd asked for drug testing in the first place, I talked to one of the people that he consulted with. It always seemed strange to me, the misnomers that came out. The person that they talked to was, I would consider, an expert in this area of drugs and drug testing. And he said, look, if the guy is fine with being tested up to 14 days before the fight, then you have no worries, because most people would taper off 14 days. So if they want to be tested before that, they're probably not doing any drugs. And yet people have always held on to that. That and, you know, anything he could have been tested for, like EPO or the CIR, you know, testosterone, would have been urine testing. So the fact that he didn't want to do blood testing really doesn't have much bearing, in my opinion. But that's just me.
Final tweet here before we get to your phone calls. Gary Willis, guys, any news on who Khan is going to fight? If the big fight happens, where will he look next? Gabe? I don't think even Amir Khan or his handlers know. And this is the one guy that I feel bad for in one sense. Is he a bit delusional? Does he have an overinflated sense of his own value? Yeah. But you know what? I give the guy credit. I think he really does want these fights, and he's tried to get them. And for some reason, whether it's a style or whether it's risk versus reward, for some reason, he's always on the outside looking in.
Well, I think what happened to him with the Alexander fight was that, this is just my opinion, but I think Richard Schaefer told him, or Al Haymon told him, don't take the fight, we'll take care of you later. They kind of used his capitulation in that situation as a way to move the chess pieces without a fight having taken place, as the chess pieces move after a fight. So Floyd was able to kind of jerk him back into play, see how things shook out, and then just made a move. And then ultimately he ends up going with Haymon. I think they felt like they needed to, even though they told me that wasn't offered and that wasn't something they needed to. They did say we would do it if they asked, or that would be great. And then they ultimately did, right? So I think, I think the reason was he was told to. But now I think he doesn't have a choice. And so he can keep asking and thinking that he's a star who has clout and they can make demands, but he just simply isn't. He's just another cog in the machine.
All right, let's get to the calls now. We can go 60 minutes, or we can go 90 or something in between, folks. It's up to you. Later on, we'll have news and notes. We'll talk about the first round of Boxino and everything else in the sport of boxing. That number, 347-215-7598. Gabe?
All right. In the 619, you're live on the next round.
Hey, how you doing, Steve? How you doing, Gabe? This is Juan from San Diego. How you doing?
Good.
What's
Juan,
up, man?
Welcome to the show.
So we can just start thanking Al Haymon because the fight won't happen in the sub-half center, Lucas versus Ruslan. Can we start doing that?
Basically, if it ends up that way, like many of his fighters, you can thank Al Haymon.
Yeah, well, Triple G, I think this fight's going to be good. It's going to be entertaining. It will tell us where he's at. That's the whole point of this one. I think what we're seeing with the odds is that there's no chance that Murray's going to win. 35-1. It almost seems taking us to the Buster Douglas anniversary odds, you know. But so I was thinking, who do you think from middleweight to welterweight has a good chance at beating Triple G? Who has a real legitimate chance, Steve? Do you think it's good enough for him?
Well, I mean, listen, I think at middleweight, I think he's just simply too dynamic, too physical, too strong, too hard-hitting for anyone. And that goes for anyone that moves up to 154, namely Canelo Alvarez. I think where he starts to get tested is at 168 with the likes of Andre Ward, obviously, if he ever comes out of hiatus. and then Carl Froch. I think Chavez is a punching bag for him. But the immediate goal is, and they've made this very clear, is to consolidate and unify at 160.
And another question I had, how do you compare his punching power with all-time great middleweight punchers like Julian Jackson or Gerald McClellan?
I think it's early to tell, you know, just because he hasn't faced that level of opposition, you know. You know, I want to see him face guys that can hit back and are of a higher class that also are kind of dangerous themselves. I mean, he's fighting who's available to him, you know, but I think it's just too early to tell. I'm never really that comfortable putting people in a historical context until they retire and then their contemporaries retire. Then we can get a real sense of who they are. Wins, you know, and losses kind of rise and fall, you know?
Yeah, I think that I haven't seen a guy punch as hard as Julian Jackson in a long time. I think Felix Trinidad is comparable. Guys that just hit you and seem to take the lights out of you from the first round, like they get hit and they just fold. Tommy Hearns probably had that kind of power. But I don't see it in anybody right now, not even Triple G. He's more like the punishing type. You know, like he hits you and it's hard punch, but after 2-3 rounds, you just fold, but not the one-punch eraser that those guys had. But,
you know, Juan,
his
punching power, I wouldn't call it concussive to the degree of a Julian Jackson or a Bob Foster, but he does remind me a lot of JC Superstar, that he basically chops wood and you scream timber in about 7-8 rounds. He's more of a wear-you-down type that hits you with a lot of doubles and triples and what I would call a true home run hitter.
Yeah, I had a talk to a sparring partner of somebody that had sparred Sugar Shane Mosley and Miguel Cotto, and he described like the difference in their power. Both very powerful guys who could knock you out. Mosley was the kind of guy that had fast power, where you would see white. It was just kind of a flash because he'd catch you sometimes with, you know, he'd blind you with a shot and then hit you with something that would make you see white. Whereas Cotto, when he hit you, he was bone-rattling power, is how he described it, that you would just feel it all the way through your skeleton. I think Triple G is a little more like that.
Yeah. Well, one last thing I have. What about that Danny Garcia-Peterson 10 rounds? What's up with that? Is that just to protect their titles or what?
Well, first of all, they're making it for 143, and it's still not clear if it's 10 or 12. I mean, a lot of people say it's 10. Danny said on Twitter that it's 12. Gabe, I'll take his word for it. He would know more than us, right?
Well, as long as Alice told him, yeah. I would assume, yeah, that he wouldn't be bullshitting about it. But, I mean, you know, we don't know. I mean, only Al knows how many rounds there are.
The Al knowing. Well, we got to get running, okay?
Thanks, guys. Have a good day. Bye.
And that opens up a phone line, that number, 347-215-7598. If you want to send us a question via Twitter, Steve, UCN Live, Gabriel_Montoya. Here's one from Paul. Steve, what do you guys think about the Fight Night Club event in L.A. on March 6th? Will you be attending? First of all, yes, I will be. And, yes, I want to see Joseph Jojo Diaz, who I think is a sharp little prospect. And, Gabe, there's a guy that you were high on a couple of years ago with the World Series of Boxing, a young Irish lad by the name of Jason Quigley that you like a lot.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I think Jason, he's an intelligent kid, you know. I wonder how his power is going to be in the pros. I don't see him as like a one-stop guy, but he's nice combinations. I think he's trained by his father, and they just really, I don't know, there's a calm and like a poise about him that's a little bit beyond his years. I remember when he first came over, he was just basically here to try to get himself ready for the Olympics, which he ended up not winning, but he did end up getting ranked as the number one middleweight in the world for a time before turning pro. But what impressed me about him was that the Matadors fought, and they were really tough fights, and he won his fight. But was very poised in how he did it. It was a versus the Russians, and they were really rough and tumble, a lot of tying up, throwing guys to the ground. It was kind of men against boys, and everybody seemed to get rattled. But Jason, who boxed his guy, kept his range, got his range fast, kept it with a good jab, and handily won his bout. But it was at the after party where everybody else was kind of celebrating and talking to girls and hanging out and kind of enjoying being a little bit of a star in the heart of Hollywood there at the W Hotel. Well, Jason sat and watched the live jazz band just in the corner, drinking water, not really socializing. He was there to win. He was there to fight and train and get better. And I imagine that's what him and his father, Connor, are doing here in the States. Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think Golden Boy did a real good job in picking up this guy where nobody else. It's kind of weird that they decided to get an Irishman for the West Coast. I would have thought somebody would pick him up and try to develop him on the East Coast. But, yeah, real good kid. Very marketable, I think.
Yeah, Gabe, right now he's currently being trained by Manuel Robles Jr. I talked to Jason on Friday at The Rock. His dad will work the corners. He'll come in a week or two before the fight. Jason Quigley has certainly acclimated himself well to living in the States. The other guy that I saw, the other Golden Boy prospect that I saw on Friday afternoon, I think has a chance is Shabransky. Slava Shabransky is a powerhouse. I saw him push around these two heavyweights and just absolutely wear them out over, I believe, 6 to 8 rounds of sparring. I think that's another guy with a shot. Here's one from J.S. writing a tweet. I wonder about the PBC shows having too much of a narrative around the stars. You think more home cooking than usual on the cards. Gabe, we know this. When there are fights involving the same company, there is a caste system. It's not always fair. Whether it's two top-ranked guys or two Don King guys, the money guy automatically has an advantage on the cards. That's just the reality of boxing.
I think so. You even saw it, and we'll get to those fights later, but like the Boxino this weekend, you had guys coming off like serious layoffs, you know, competing against the guys that I felt like, oh, well, this guy's supposed to win. If the other guy has, you know, 24 hours notice, or he hasn't fought in like 26 months. You're like, well, what, you know, why is this guy here? You know, although, you know, Vito Gasparin ended up winning. So, yeah, the money always goes towards the other guy. You know, and speaking of Slava, that's another guy. He's a former matador himself, as well as, I believe, Joe Diaz. Those are all not JoJo. Or did JoJo? I could be wrong. But Manny Robles coached the Matadors, and so he's getting a lot of those guys. And I think Manny is a trainer that people are going to be talking about in the next few years. He's not as well known to TV audiences, but he will be. Really smart guy, believes in the fundamentals, and really just likes to push the pace. You know, and have these guys be aggressive. Both those guys, Shabransky, he's always in fights. The only thing I wonder about him, in all the WSB fights, very aggressive, but he's a bit of a bleeder. If he's learned how to kind of not smack his head into other people as much as he did then, and then he'll be able to stave that off. But another, yeah, that's going to be an exciting night.
347-215-7598. Gabe, let's hit the phone lines.
Okay, in the 860, you're live on the next round.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing, CT?
CT, welcome aboard.
What's up? I just basically want to, you know, talk about the fight this weekend about Triple G and Martin Murray. I want to take a little quote off George Foreman, what he likes to say about punchers, which he witnessed himself. He said, a lot of the guys that he faced had a lot of nervous tension, and that's what I see as a lot of opponents that face Triple G. I want to see how Martin Murray's face reacts to one of Triple G's hard shots from the beginning, how he reacts psychologically. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, there's an old saying, everyone has a plan until they get hit, and I think that also refers to the mental outlook. I mean, Martin Murray is a rugged, tough guy. I will certainly never question his gumption and toughness as a fighter, but, you know, Abel Sanchez said something very interesting to me. Like I said, this guy is very durable and tough. And Abel said very calmly, but he's never faced Gennady. And he says he has two choices. If he holds his hands up high, then we're going to go to the body, and it'll be a different type of punishing attack. So it'll be interesting. I think Gabe makes a good point. The overlooked factor is, for all of Murray's toughness and durability and his experience, 31 fights, 12 stoppages. Gabe, those numbers don't suggest to me that he can hold off Golovkin for 36 minutes.
No, I mean, the feel-out process is about getting hit by the other guy and maybe taking a Sunday punch and going, can I take it? Do I have anything to worry about? I don't think, you know, coming into the fight, he's got much to worry about. I mean, Sergio Martinez got dropped by that right hand, but I think that was a rapidly declining guy coming off of knee surgery and coming back too soon. Getting to Golovkin is not that guy. And hearkening, you know, to what the previous caller said about, you know, it's like the anniversary of the Tyson Douglas odds. You know, this isn't a guy that's hanging out in a hotel rooms drinking or, you know, enjoying Tokyo nightlife rather than training. This is Gennady Golovkin. He's, you know, the king of Big Bear Mountain. So I think he's going to be in fantastic shape as always. And able, you know, he's a guy that's outspoken, but I think that's born out of confidence and knowing that he's got himself a thoroughbred. You know, and I think he's just speaking confidently.
Yeah, and by the way, speaking of that, the 7-day weigh-in with the WBC, if I read correctly, Golovkin come in at 163? To me, that's an indicator. He's ready to go right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's always been kind of light, though. I mean, every time you see him at press conferences, he's, you know, announcing fights, and he looks like he's close to weight. I think they live right around there, and they don't have to really kill themselves, go through that barbaric weight-making process that final week. I think they probably do it right and just kind of train down naturally to that weight, maybe dehydrate a little bit the last few days. 3 pounds is nothing. I mean, you can, you know, lose a couple pounds just sleeping. There are 2 to 3 pounds from the dehydration. So that says a lot. And Murray came in at 165. So I think this is going to be a real middleweight contest. And how much they weigh on the night of the fight isn't going to be that much of a factor.
Yeah, I agree. I see the fight ending like around the 9th, 10th round, along with Gabe. I see it ending with a body shot. I think Murray keeps his guard up a little bit too high, and I don't think his punch volume is big enough for Triple G to fear anything.
CT, anything else we can do for you?
No, thank you.
All right, CT, as always, thank you for your contribution. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
585. You're live on the next round. 585.
Hey, guys. It's Jake from State Farm.
Jake, how
What's
are
up,
you?
Man?
Dude, I'm a teacher, so I had a snow day today. And
what are you?
I've been getting completely stoned the whole day. And I'm
calling
you.
You know what? You're exactly the type of leader and mentor our young Americans need.
Well, I strive to be that guy. Yeah. I try to set that example.
Great.
So, Jake,
your guys' radio show makes every single Monday of mine. Like, I look forward to it. I sit back with a bowl of weed, and I listen to you guys fucking talk boxing. And it's great. You guys are
wow.
I appreciate that.
That is an honor. It really is.
Yeah.
We're honored that we are up there with your beloved Mary Jane. We really are.
Yeah, statistically
Mondays,
better for you than beer.
You guys and Mary Jane.
So, Jake, how excited are you as a boxing fan? I know you're the type that watches everything, and you've been around the block. Does Golovkin give you the same feeling that Mike Tyson did, let's say, in 1988 and 89?
Sure, he's got that, you know, he's just going to blow past people. I mean, when Floyd fought Baldomir, he wasn't a 35-1 underdog or a 35-1 favorite, but, you know, he's going against, Triple G is going against the same kind of type of opponent, maybe. I don't know. Baldomir was the worst linear champion I've ever seen. He was a little linear champion nonetheless. So let's just say they're the same type of opponent. And Triple G's a 35-1 favorite over that guy. And that's pretty incredible.
I'll guarantee you this, it'll be much more memorable. I mean, that was – and I remember me and Doug Fisher were there. We were working for Max Boxing at the time at the Mandalay Bay. That was one of the most depressing, dreary, boring events we had ever been to, and I still remember Charles Barkley and Tiger Woods actually getting out of their seats to go back to gamble around the 10th or 11th round. They didn't even want to stick around till the end. I'll say one thing about Golovkin, and again, I'm not saying his strength of schedule is very good because it's not yet, but when he fights, I want to be there, and generally I am very entertained.
Man, Tiger has a pretty busy social schedule, particularly at that time. So I don't really blame him. But yeah, it's like, dude, there's cocktail waitresses to be had. This fight's terrible. I think it speaks to power. I mean, more than anything, you know, people could say they love the sweet science, this, that, and the other thing. I love a good defender, a good skilled fighter. Give me a knockout puncher every time. And it, for me, like, knowing that Gennady's going to fight on Saturday, like, you know, I've got that day's clear. I'm going to watch that live. I'm not going to miss that. It's the same feeling I had when Tito was fighting. Somewhere should take a shot. It's the same feeling I had when Tyson, you know, was fighting. When a puncher's on, you know somebody's going to get knocked out or they're going to go for broke. You got to watch it. I mean, Floyd, you know, all that stuff, he's very, very, you know, skilled. I'm a big Rigondeaux guy. But I'll tell you, I wouldn't be as big a Rigondeaux guy if he didn't have power. With Floyd, you just know you're going to get a 12-round decision. That's the way he fights. But with punchers, too, I think there's an innate recklessness to them. They risk a little bit more because they know the payoff of that risk is going to be knocking somebody out and exciting the crowd. So, yeah, I think it's just Triple G is exactly what boxing needs.
Jake, so right around 5:15 Eastern time, as we start dialing over to HBO, will you have your remote control in one hand and your bong in the other?
When I'm watching a fight? Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to make sure.
We're talking about like a weekend. I'm so
oh, yeah.
To
true.
They wake up until I go to sleep. So,
yeah. Not the only one getting knocked out. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Jake, anything else we can do for you?
Yeah, I'd like to ask your opinion on say this Heyman, PBC situation takes hold and they're successful. Are you guys at all thinking about or maybe afraid of that he could whitewash boxing history, kind of like Dana White has done with MMA and Fedor and all of that?
Hmm. Gabe.
Well, that's a great question. I don't know. I mean, there's been a lot of organizations, right? I'd love to get like more of a historian, like a Doug Fisher, who is somebody that really cares about history, or Cliff Rold to answer that question. Because, you know, you look at all the organizations that have happened over the years, like, you know, people always want the WBC belt, but it's not the oldest belt, right? The WBA is older. There's been other organizations early on, and there was also the mob, which used to control all of boxing, and we've survived all of that, even going further back before when there was even gloves. I think the sport will always survive. Like Larry Merchant said it best, you know, nothing could kill it, nothing could save it. But, you know, I mean, I think that MMA, because it's so young, that was able to happen. It's just infinitely younger than boxing. So I don't think he can. I guess that's a long way to get to. I don't think that'll happen. I don't even know if he's going to be successful in taking the thing over.
You don't think it's possible that this next generation of boxing fans grows up thinking that Floyd Mayweather is the best fighter of all time?
Well, that's already
or that Deontay Wilder is the heavyweight. Yeah, or that Deontay Wilder is the heavyweight champion and the Klitschkos don't exist.
Sure.
That's possible. Yeah. That's possible.
So, Jake, have you worked on your lesson plan for your students tomorrow?
No, but I did want to ask you this question. Every single Wednesday, because I'm a media studies teacher, every Wednesday my students interview somebody in the media, and I'm curious if they could interview you, Steve.
Really? You really want to subject them to that? You must hate this student. Yeah, listen, you know my email from all my stories. Have them drop me a line, and I'd be glad to do it for you, Jake.
Hey, I'll send it out tonight. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Jake.
All right.
Thank you for the call. 347-215-7598. Gabe, who's next?
I think I got a contact high. In the 412, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys. This is Damien in Pittsburgh.
Hey, what's up?
From the Steel City. Welcome.
Hi. A couple questions. If, you know, Heyman's got all the money, now he has all these dates, all these, you know, all the fighters, if this continues, if you're Top Rank or you're Golden Boy, how do you pitch the fighters for them to stay with you or to sign them as a fighter's C roster?
Right now, what you say is if you actually want to make the top end dollar and the most money in the sport, it's still with us. Take away Mayweather, it's still with everyone else that's not with Heyman. And if you really want to be developed into a pay-per-view star, from the beginning, there is no history with that. And I believe what Heyman tries to do, Gabe, if he's trying to do the UFC model, is to make the brand bigger than any individual fighter and eventually be able to suppress wages. And that's the one thing that I don't think the fighters realize exactly what the big picture plan is in that particular regard.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, if he'll do the thing about you know, the way the UFC gives bonuses, you know, the KO of the night, fight of the night, bonuses. And I was told by somebody, and maybe an MMA writer could verify this, or even a more knowledgeable UFC fan, but that the language kind of is vague in that, you know, you could get they could give you a bonus between like $10,000 and $50,000, and what's in between that range, you know, in invisible ink, is as long as you keep in line and don't talk about the UFC badly, and go along with the program, fighter we want you to fight. You know, if you're one of those guys that's outspoken in the media, yeah, maybe you won't get a bonus, but if you do, it's going to be $10,000. If you're one of the guys that goes along with the program, you get the $50,000. I'm curious if Al will kind of put that sort of system into play. It's another way to kind of control his people, control his fighters. They don't have the, you know, that's going to be a big picture down the line. You know, they make good money. Well, who knows if they're going to continue to make Al Heyman money and if he can sustain that model with all this, because it is all time buys. I think the answer to your question, though, is, you know, a smaller roster like Top Ranks, more personal attention, they can throw more resources at you and make you the star, which is the old model.
But they have fewer options as
to where they can
opponent.
Go.
Right.
They do. Listen, this is a very, very interesting time in boxing, and the marketplace is changing. Certainly the paradigm is being adjusted. And quite frankly, some of it is actually welcome. I mean, I think boxing had been stuck into the same box for so many years that some of this, and this is not necessarily Heyman's goal, but some of the byproduct of what he's doing in the long term may actually benefit the sport as a whole. But we'll see. Again, that word I throw around is sustainability.
My other question is, you know, regarding, I guess, the media announcing for, you know, these Heyman cards. I heard he has, you know, he's picking and choosing what media will be covering the fights. I'm just curious, do you think somebody like Al Michaels and Marv Albert, who already have a career, an illustrious career, do you think they're going to, you know, turn into Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg and UFC where they just back the program 100%, or do you think they'll be outspoken and not care? Do you think a little bit of Larry Merchant inside them?
Whew, that's a great question. Gabe, I think those guys that were just named, I don't think they know. They may not even care. But you know what? They're PBC employees, so I don't really expect them to be outspoken. It's really the rest of us schleps, us boxing peasants. Are we going to take a stand or are we going to play ball? Let's be very honest about this. The guys who are going to get credentials, there is a taciturn agreement that, hey, we're going to play ball, right? I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely what it is. That's always been the interesting thing about boxing is that they do have that right. I mean, they are the promoter. It's, in that sense, kind of a private event that the media is invited to, and you get good seats. And, you know, the payoffs, as some people think, is to write favorable copy. I mean, Richard Schaefer would say that to me all the time. I've had other people in that organization in the past say to me, you know, write more positive stories about boxing. Why do you always have to focus on the problems? I'm thinking, you know, because people's lives are on the line, you know, so you should point out the problems. That way everybody's
saying, you know what, Larry Merchant? Larry Merchant told me something in a conversation last week. I wished him happy birthday, and I kind of told him about what's going on. And you know, Larry is an old-school journalist. He said, Steve, based on what you've told me, I'd be insulted if I was allowed to get a credential. He's from a different breed.
All right, yeah, thank you for your time tonight.
Absolutely.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Gabe? I think it's something that you really It's a problem. I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with Larry. You should be a little embarrassed, and you should decline it. I wouldn't. I mean, this is America. You can't lock the press out because you want them to say
sure
a certain
can.
Thing.
In boxing, well, yeah, in boxing, you can.
Granted, America dropped to number 46 in press freedom because we've been locking up journalists in the last few years. But still, I mean, that's the basic principles. We have a freedom of press and a freedom of speech. And I guess in boxing you can do it. But like I said, the responsibility now weighs heavier on the guys that get credentials to tell the truth and to ask the right questions for the people that are not allowed to be there to do so.
Yeah, and Gabe, for the record, I'm perfectly prepared never to go to those shows. And let's just put it that way. A couple of tweets here. Here's a couple from the Nut House podcast to make some very salient points. Chavez would have got what, $8 million for Golovkin? Now getting $2 million for Funfaro with Al. He also said before, LOL at, quote, Heyman pays fighters like no one else. Bradley got $2 million versus Chavez as the second biggest Vegas fight that weekend. Tis true. And here's one from Alex Pierpaoli, and I hope I didn't botch that name. Alex is a good guy, very good boxing observer. He says, GGG brings a Mike Tyson-esque, you are about to see someone be harmed vibe of pure spectacle only boxing can. Very true. And here's one from the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. Heyman needs to create his own history to a degree to succeed. He can't sell the truth. Too complicated. And Gabe, that's why he's going to pick his own house writers. It's really that simple.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they already got house writers, people that have aligned themselves. I mean, I understand that, you know, journalism is about, a big part of it is about relationships and about, being, I guess, friendly. I've always felt like you could be friendly with people and not necessarily be friends. But it's a small community. It's a niche sport. And so you do end up becoming friends with people. I mean, I won't lie. I was at Dan Goosen's funeral, not just because I was a boxing person, because I consider Dan to be a friend. And I was saddened by his loss. It's a tough thing. But the bottom line is that, like I always go back to, is that people's lives are on the line, and you want it to be as safe as possible. And you also don't want to see these people get taken advantage of. The sport, you know, all the fighters are kind of independent contractors that are risking their lives for a shot at a bunch of money, and hopefully enough money so that when they retire at a reasonable age, 35 probably being the most reasonable, they can have money for the rest of their lives, because they're probably going to be a little damaged and they're going to need to rest and not be able to do many other things. If they're lucky, they can get, like a Paulie Malignaggi, get another job. So I think it's important that everybody keeps everybody in line, particularly the power brokers, and particularly one that seems to want to circumvent the rule that a manager cannot be the promoter, cannot be the only guy calling the shots. I think that's incredibly dangerous for the fighters.
One last tweet before we go back to the phone lines. 30 minutes left on this show. We have jam-packed phone lines. Nuthouse Podcast, he has the hat trick. He says, I recognize Jake's voice. I'm one of his students. Now I know that doing drugs is cool. Thanks, LITR. Gabe, let's go back to the phone lines.
Public service. 530, you're live on the next round.
Good evening, Gabe, Steve, ringside, Robert here.
Steve,
I tuned in a little late, but did you guys talk about the CBS thing on Saturday night?
Robbie, we tried to expunge that from our mind. I actually sat through that because we had two or three TVs at my friend's house.
Right.
And I got to tell you, that was about as, I'm going to be kind here, interesting as it got in terms of what was being televised. Let's just put it that way.
That was one of the most pathetic boxing cards I think I've seen in about 20 years, maybe longer.
And that's saying something, Robbie, because
yeah.
I've seen some bad ones.
Now, they have the NBC has the card on April 11th with Peterson and Garcia, and also the pay-per-view fight that night is scheduled. Did Heyman do that on purpose so people wouldn't buy that fight?
No, that was more or less a coincidence, and Peter Rivera, the head of PR Best Boxing, he understands what he's up against, and not only is he up against an NBC show, he's up against a guy whose heritage is Puerto Rican. but there's a finite amount of dates that really works. And unfortunately for Peter Rivera, he is going up theoretically against a free show.
Yeah, now I'm assuming both of those are primetime events, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, all right. And as far as Golovkin, anytime he fights, I'm the TV is on. He's one of those guys you can't miss. But since this is the Tyson Douglas anniversary kind of thing, I don't think we're going to see a Buster Douglas performance out of Martin Murray here. I think Golovkin is a completely different animal. He doesn't have any of the vices that Tyson had back then, and I don't think Martin Murray realizes what he's up against.
I let me just say this. I didn't see any hint of a guy overlooking Martin Murray. I just got to say it again. The work ethic and the level of precision that Golovkin works at, and him sparring against bigger guys like Julius Jackson, who had to be in his mid-180s, David Imorisi, who's been in the ring with guys like Alexander Povetkin, and to see him just physically push those guys around, to me, I was just like, wow, this guy is right now, even at age 32, you get the sense he is still in his physical apex.
I know, it sure sounds like it. Now, I'm assuming he's going to win this fight. What does that do for Golovkin's next fight? Because doesn't that put more pressure on Miguel Cotto? Like, hey, look, this is your mandatory. You can't duck him forever.
Well, here's what I think is going to happen. It seems to me, and all indications are, Gabe, this is the middleweight champion of the world. This is why I think the linear stuff needs to be put to bed. We might have a middleweight championship fight of Miguel Cotto against Brandon Rios or Tim Bradley. Okay, fine. But after that, the WBC has made it very clear. You either face Golovkin, whoever has this belt, or hand that belt over.
Well, number one, I would not support either Rios or Bradley. They're good fighters, but I would not support them fighting Cotto for the middleweight title. I think I've heard Andujar Ilora be mentioned, but he's at 154, so I don't know if that would work either.
Yeah, but here the other issue is Lara is with Heyman, so that becomes a non-starter, Robbie.
Yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it. Believe me, I'm starting to really learn how he's doing business. And by the way, I think the reason why he took the StubHub date, that was his punishment to Lucas Matisse for leaving him and choosing Golden Boy. That's my theory.
You know, it's not the craziest theory in the world. All I know is, again, for all those people who are saying Heyman is the savior and he's all about the fans, well, explain this one. Robbie, we got to get running, okay? We got jam-packed phone lines.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Robbie, thank you as always for calling in. Gabe, we have a guy that's waited for nearly an hour, Robert Buffa, who has the distinction of being blocked by the PBC Twitter account.
What's up, guys?
Robert, how you doing?
I'm good, from Michigan. I sent you that this morning. I wondered if you were going to bring that up. I don't even know how that happened, because I don't think I've ever even tweeted to them. I must have got tagged in somebody else's thing, and they saw it and blocked me, so whatever.
Robert, based on what they tweet out, you got lucky.
Right. All right, I had a question for you guys about the Floyd Manny thing. Now, everyone's talking about how they're pushing the dates out and stuff. You think that's because Floyd wants to give Manny a shorter training camp? I mean, I know it's normally only 8 weeks, but don't you think he might want a little longer than that for, you know, the biggest fight of his career?
You know, I really don't know. Who knows what's going on in the mind of Floyd? To me, if you have an 8-week training camp, both fighters are fine. Looking at Manny, and I don't know what he weighs. I don't have a scale handy, but it doesn't look like he's really all that far from being able to fight within a few weeks. He looks like he's in reasonably good shape. I think this is really this simple. Floyd is being Floyd.
Right. And then I had another question about the Heyman taking the dates. Now, if you're Oscar right now, wouldn't you try to just get a hold of the date in September for Mexican Independence Day if you can get it that far out, just so you can push Floyd off that, put down a ridiculous amount of money or whatever? Because if this is what it's going to be, he's going to just get those important dates all the time.
I believe that from this point forward, I think people, and just talking to the those involved in the industry, they now know this is a cat and mouse game, if not a war. And I believe that stuff that you just said, I believe a lot of those tactics will be used. I think there'll be a lot of subterfuge. I think there'll be a lot of play action fakes. And it's a new world. It's a new world, Robert. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, because if I'm Oscar, I say, okay, I'm having Canelo fight that day, and then just start talking about Triple G or whoever else, just so that way people are going to start talking about it because he wants to fight on those dates anyway. But then one more thing, because I'm from Michigan. I know you're not a big fan of the Durrell brothers, but what's going on with Andre and Anthony? I keep hearing James DeGale, and then Anthony's thinking about maybe George Groves, but having an optional defense. Like, he hasn't fought since August. Like, this is a little too long between fights.
You know, again, with those Heyman guys, you got to ask Al Heyman. The DeGale situation, I believe, might be a vacant title. So the sanctioning body may actually determine when and where they're going to fight. And if they don't come to an agreement, there'll be a purse bid. There'll be a certain amount of time the fight has to be put on, and then they will fight for the vacant title. That's about all the information that I have, Gabe.
Yeah, that's no. I've even talked to people connected to them. They have no idea. It's all in Al's plan.
All right, cool. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. First time calling in. I usually work at night. I got a couple weeks off because I'm having a kid in a couple days. So I was like, I'm going to call. So.
Oh, well, congratulations,
cool,
Robert.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Appreciate everything.
And don't expect to get a good night's sleep for the next 18 years. Gabe, who's next on the phone lines?
All right, thanks.
In the 909, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's
909. Hey, what's up, man?
How's it going? Yeah, I'm actually the Boxing Reality guy. I tweet you guys all the time. So I had a question here. If this PBC thing works out for Al Heyman, right, would it be possible for Top Rank, Golden Boy, Main Events to all jump together? And, you know, because the desire to put them on regular TV from other channels will be there to put better fights on, which they have been doing recently. Because that whole Al Heyman PBC thing, it's basically scripted and fake boxing without being scripted and fake boxing, you know?
You know, here's what I think, and I've talked to people that are directly affected by this. There's no doubt in my mind, they don't have to merge, they don't all have to hold hands and sing kumbaya, but if you're not underneath that Heyman umbrella, and which means HBO, Golden Boy, Top Rank, Main Events, Artie Palullo, Gary Shaw, and whoever else across the world, K2, you better present a united front and put your best foot forward. And whatever that really means, I'm not sure, but we're going to find out. But right now, Gabe, I give HBO credit. I think they have one hell of a first half of 2015.
They do.
There's no question. There's no question. They've put together some great fights, and I think they really get it. You know, overseas isn't really going to be affected by this at all, but I think what's happening over here, although it will be interesting, is that, you know, in the past, stars would emerge over here and then guys over there would want to kind of close out their career or come over here and get a payday with somebody. With that Al Heyman machine, they can't really do that without signing their way into the family. So it's going to be interesting just to see with this. There's two giant universes now happening. And really, like, Main Events kind of operates in its own world. Top Rank and Golden Boy have operated in their own worlds. But now you've got this giant world, you know, Al Heyman world happening. So I agree with you, Steve. I think a united front has to happen. They all have to band together. But what's interesting is what they're banding together to do is to keep boxing fractured and divided. I'm not sure if that's going to work.
No, yeah, I totally understand. I just see it like, as your last caller said, you know, to try and secure that that Mexican Independence Day weekend, if Oscar was to put Canelo against anyone on network TV, Floyd's pay-per-view is not getting bought. It's just not going to happen unless he's fighting Pacquiao.
I don't think there's any doubt. And there's also this theory, or some believe, that Pacquiao and Mayweather, they're going to fight in the second half of 2000. You know what? That's not going to fly. There's an old saying, piss or get off the pot. To expect the general public to financially support and subsidize two more fights where you're expected to dole out about $180 for guys who aren't going to have any real shot to beat Mayweather or Pacquiao before they meet. That's a very, very tough sell.
Definitely. That's why I believe that unless they're fighting each other, Oscar could put Canelo, I mean, obviously, you know, if HBO was to approve of it, Oscar could put Canelo on network TV, and everyone in the world would watch that.
Yeah.
Or I should say America, an American TV.
You know what the reality is, though? There's no doubt. The quantity belongs to Heyman. But if you look at the quality, and you say to me, who are the top dozen or so fighters that really matter? And I don't mean pound for pound. None of that mental masturbation. But who are the fighters that are relevant, that really move the needle when they fight? There's obviously Floyd. There's Manny, Cotto, Golovkin, Klitschko, Carl Froch in Europe. The majority of them guys are still on the HBO universe for now. Keep that in mind. They do have a bit of a head start there.
Yeah, they do. I see Al Heyman being his own demise. I see him making this thing work. You know, boxing fans kind of buying into it, but, you know, Oscar can start exposing that Tyshawn guy and, you know, getting the fans who didn't know anything about Deontay Wilder and be like, oh, look at this other big, giant guy. And maybe he could challenge Deontay and get attention to themselves, you know? He could definitely expose him a little bit more.
Well, let's
I don't think
see.
He'll beat him. I don't think he'll beat him by any means.
I was there at Tayshaun's pro debut. There are punches he threw that have still yet to land. That's how slow he is. But
I don't think he'll beat him. I just know that Al Heyman he's trying to market to the people who don't know boxing well enough. And I believe that Tayshaun is the perfect guy. You know, just his body size, just the way he looks, could get that attention.
Yeah. All right, listen, we got to get running, okay?
All right, thanks. I appreciate the time, guys.
No problem. Please call in again. Gabe, let's roll through the phone lines here.
All right. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I think that's the thing that MMA got on boxing, has on boxing right now, is they've got about ten years of this next generation is now maturing. Kids that grew up doing MMA, at a very young age. There used to be kids that did wrestling or taekwondo, but now they're doing jiu-jitsu and starting with a mixture of styles right off the bat. I remember seeing on the street, this is going to be like 5 years ago, I was directing a play, and there was like a window out to the street, and across the street, it was a bus stop, and these two kids, they weren't boxing, play fighting. They were doing MMA. One was shooting, and the other kid was trying to get, a guillotine choke on him, and they were moving. And I thought, wow, boxing's in trouble. The kids are not playing. They're not pretending to be Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard anymore. So I wonder when Al gets all this on NBC, how long it's going to take before kids want to be a boxer again. Let's go through some older ones here. The 111, I think this is like a Skype number. You're live on the next round.
This is Jasmine.
Jasmine, welcome aboard.
Hi. First of all, let me say it. I'm a Floyd fan. So
my condolences. I'm kidding. I kid.
I should have known.
I kid.
Okay, first of all, as far as Lara fight and Cotto, that fight can happen. Cotto is not signed exclusively to HBO. So, and it looks like that may be his option in June. Second of all, Floyd, I don't know where this magical thinking is coming with Floyd is becoming this magic Negro, where he has to fight this fight with Manny by May, announce it at the two biggest sporting events, the Super Bowl or the NBA All-Star Game. He has to put on an excellent undercard. The names I'm hearing, I'm like, are you kidding me? I doubt they spend that much money. It's going to be TMT stacked. And then he has to, you know, make sure it's a sunny, bright day in Vegas. It's becoming laughable. You have these media guys who's coming out saying the fight is done only for the head of Showtime or somebody else to come out to say it's not. I think we need to, the way you get kids to do what you want them to do is just not talk about it. Just don't write about it. Don't tweet about it. Don't say
anything. So Jasmine, you're not excited by the thought of Badu Jack and Ishae Smith on
the
undercard?
No, save it. As I said on another thing, my Timberland or my tail will be through the window of my damn screen if I see a TMT stack fight. No, I don't. But the reality is, you know, Floyd's going to put those type of fights on because it's his show. And as a fan, I'm okay with that to a degree. But in the reality, I would have somebody like a Crawford fighting somebody at a junior welterweight division, but that won't happen. It can happen since he's not fighting in March, but I just think we need to relax. If the fight happens, it happens. I'm perfectly okay, in my opinion, if this fight don't happen because I'm tired of it.
Jasmine, you're like a lot of other people, but again, in terms of the date, Floyd, and I wrote about this earlier this year, what's in a date? Why this fight could literally happen on New Year's Eve, and it would be bigger than any other thing. And I think it's very dangerous how Cinco de Mayo and the Mexican Independence Day, how we have to have a pay-per-view event. Why? What if the fight's not good? And we have put the cart before the horse, and this is now what it's led to, this stuff.
And it's a making of our own doing. We gave it the power. We fed the beast. And so we're stuck with the we don't get the results we want. We get mad. And it's like, I'm just tired of it. I really am. And I'm part of it because I check my Twitter feeds. I check, you know, your website, other websites, because I'm bored into this. And I really don't believe this fight is going to be worth the hype. I want to pay my $100. And I'm going to get the same fight. And I'm a Floyd fan. This is for
Jasmine,
the Floyd
fan. Do you know how ironic that is? Like, I'm sick of it. I don't care. Oh, but I'm going to pay my $100. That's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I'm a woman. I do those types of things. I spend money on things I really don't need.
I mean, Gabe, this kind of reminds me of that crack addict that says, man, this habit is killing me. Meanwhile, you're shooting up your arm or smoking the pipe.
Yeah.
It's horrible. But anyway, guys, thanks.
Chilling. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for this show.
Jasmine, please call back again. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Gabe.
and 805, you're live on the next round. 805.
Hey, guys, this is Nacho. Nothing much. I just saw something about David Lemieux has accepted to fight Hassan Ndam for the vacant.
Yes.
Role.
I think it's a very good fight, and I'm just thankful someone is willing to fight Hassan Ndam for that vacant IBF title, Gabe. It was getting ridiculous.
Dude, you couldn't give that thing away. Yeah, you know, David's that guy. I mean, he wants to be a champion. He wants to risk. That's not a great style for him. That's a very good fight. I think both guys can win it. Ndam has shown that he can be put down on the floor. I think that the Lemieux might be a more explosive puncher than Peter Quillen. So I think it's a very good fight because, you know, a boxing punching style like Ndam's isn't exactly a recipe for success for David. So good fight. I'm glad somebody wanted the title.
Yeah, that's true, especially after Billy Joe Saunders passed on it. So, you guys were talking about.
Just to address that, I mean, Saunders, people have criticized him for it, but, I mean, Lemieux was a young guy when he was on the verge of a title shot. I think if he had beaten Rubio, he would have gotten a title shot, or at least moved into that spot. And his trainer at the time, Russ Amber, was like, he's too young. I think he was 25 at the time, maybe younger. And Saunders is 26, and I think he's making financial decisions. He got paid to step aside before. I don't know what his reasoning was for this time, but it seems to me if you know you're not ready – then there's nothing really wrong with that.
And by the way, guys, here's the other issue. Billy Joe Saunders, as part of his step-aside fee, this was a two-tier deal that he actually gets the winner of Quillen Lee. So I think that's part of the deal that he couldn't take another title shot. So I don't know. I think Saunders is taking a little bit too much heat.
Okay. And I was just wondering, did you guys watch the fight over the weekend between Carson Jones and Brian Rose? That had to be like one of the worst stoppages I've ever seen. That was terrible.
That was pretty terrible. Yeah, I did watch it. You know, and it heading into it, people had said like, you know, the Rose is maybe looking fragile and not so good, and maybe he should quit. And I saw it was a good fight. He hurt Jones. He got excited. He ended up getting hurt himself. He didn't get decked. I thought it was one of the strangest stoppages, particularly it was the final. It didn't make a lot of sense. I would like to see them do it again because it was heating up into a hell of a fight, certainly a hell of a first round. And maybe the ref, I don't know what he was thinking, but no, I agree. It was a terrible stoppage.
Nacho, we got to get running, okay? We don't have much time. We've got a lot of calls to blow through here.
Thanks a lot.
Gabe, let's
get
through it.
Appreciate it. 516, you're live on the next round.
Hey, Gabe, Steve, this is Evan from Las Vegas, from Pennsylvania. How y'all doing?
Evan, what's
going
on?
What's up, Matt?
I think, well, before I almost died of shock two calls ago, I think Jasmine was her name, because it seemed like to be a logical and clear-headed Floyd Mayweather fan, so I almost died of shock right there.
Well, she is a female. She's a female. That's the variable. They're a little bit more rational than some of us men. Let's be very honest about it.
That's a good point, but, you know, with all this, you know, the show has basically been monopolized with Al Heyman talk and all the crap that's going on there, and I spoke about this when he called Rubio. It makes you appreciate guys like Golovkin and just guys that go about their business and don't talk but just knock the heck out of people. So all this Heyman garbage going on, it's just nice to have a weekend where we can look forward to a fight. And in terms of Golovkin, there seems to be a very, very slight backlash against Golovkin in response to sort of how us fans and media members have voiced the praise upon him. And they say, well, he should move up to 168 to fight this guy or that guy. And those are the same people that if you said, well, Floyd, why don't you go up to 160 and fight Golovkin, they would call you crazy. So they're so people like that are asking Golovkin to do things that they would never
but
expect
Evan,
Floyd.
But, Evan, I look at that as a sign of arrival, because 2 years ago, there was apathy towards Golovkin. He was a beige spot on a beige wall. But once you have detractors, as much as you do have supporters, you are creating a certain type of interest level and debate. I look at that as a positive, whether you agree with those arguments or not.
Well, I definitely think it's a good thing that at least Golovkin got himself into that discussion. Well, we all know that Floyd wouldn't touch him even if they fought in 36-ounce gloves. But the last thing, I'll hang up and let you get on the show. But in terms of 2014 being sort of the year of Heyman and sort of just with Showtime's telecast really going into the dumper. I mean, the two most entertaining things to come out of boxing in 2014, and I'm not even joking, is the Twitter account of James Bagg Jr. and the Ray Pop watch. So that's the most fun I had in boxing in 2014. Here we go. Evan, good night.
No arguments here. And also, I would say at Stay Cool Wheels and Blogger Boxing. That would be my Mount Rushmore of must-see or must-follows on Twitter. Gabe, a couple of news and notes here. Randy Caballero, February 27th. First title defense at Fantasy Springs. That has been scratched. He has an ankle injury. No timetable on his return. April 10th, looks like there's going to be a Showbox triple header at the Aviator Arena in Brooklyn, featuring the likes of Ivan Redcatch and Evgeny Heitrov, the Ukrainian Tyson, and Frank Galarza. Gabe, the Boxino this past Friday, I tell you, again, anything could happen in a tournament setting, but if Stanislav Skoronrod and Brandon Adams meet in the finals, and I think they will, I think that is a hell of a junior middleweight fight.
Sweet. Yeah, that is a sweet, sweet fight, man. That kid, Skorbov, is a monster. He goes to the body in rapid succession. I think he knocks Thompson out, right? I mean, that guy.
Agreed.
Thompson, I know, he came in late, and he looked nice. He boxed well against a guy that apparently doesn't know what a jab is. He's got a nice shell defense, Pinnell, but he didn't do anything to move forward and kind of get in position and surprise Thompson. But Thompson has a really bad habit. He's a long-necked guy, which I always think is just an accident, a knockout waiting to happen. But he leaves his head out there. He drops his lead hand quite a bit, and he's just open for a left hook. I think he's going to get it. Again, it's Skorbov. But, Vito Gasparian is a guy that it's very
he's awkward.
He's got his work. He's very awkward. He's worked them like I've watched Vito train for years when I was living in L.A. He's a Justin Fortune trained fighter, so I worked out with him all the time at Wild Card. He's a gym rat. That's why he was able to come out after 26 months and get to it. He trains people and he trains constantly, never out of shape. So he's very workmanlike and he gets in there. I remember watching him work with Angulo. When Angulo was down in Southern California still training, And he's just a rough customer, man. He doesn't. It's like he's one of those guys that isn't great at one single thing, but he's very good at a lot of things. Good technical boxer, and that you know that could make for a very good fight with Adams. I'm not going to make a pick on that fight yet.
Gabe, let's get to the phone lines. We got 5 minutes.
All right, in the 858, you're live on the next round.
Ooh, late round knockdown. Let's move on.
I can knock him down like crazy. 203, you're live on the next round.
Hey, guys, it's Alex Pierpaoli here. At
Alex!
Hey,
first-time call, right? I'm assuming.
You read my tweet earlier. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely, I did.
Yeah, I had
two
questions. One, I think, is probably a quick one. I'm just wondering, I see on BoxRec, I don't see Iron Mike Promotions listed as doing the
Alex,
the Argenis Mendez fight. Has he gone, sadly, to Bolivian?
Yes, as Mike Tyson would say, they've gone to Bolivian, and every one of their fighters has basically been swallowed up by Al Haymon, Gary Jonas, who had big plans. Bob Arum would say he's just another bleach bone strewn through the desert.
Wow. Wow, that's too bad.
How?
But, hey, at least he's got cartoons now, right? I mean, I think that's doing well.
Yeah, he's doing okay. Mike's in a good place.
Yes, I'm very happy about that. I'm very happy about that. But, yeah, the other question, I hate to take it back to the Al Haymon issue, but I did have was wondering, I had heard, I was wondering if you guys had some details on the concussion research that is supposedly part of the whole PBC deal. I mean, I think that it's good, but I think I'm encouraged by that because I think – you know, I know from all the tragedies I've seen just over the years of watching the sport, I watch boxing differently today, and I do, of course, want to, you know, I met Shane Mosley the other day. He's one of my favorite fighters. I mean, a couple of weeks ago at Foxwoods, and he's one of my favorite fighters, and if you listen to video of him, it's dramatic. So we know what this sport does. I mean, I guess this is one of those conspiracy theory things there. In a way, if Al Haymon determines that these guys get so damaged after one or two fights, it's a way to sort of end the sport as we know it, isn't it?
Hmm. That is interesting.
Well,
I mean, Gabe, go ahead.
No, that's an interesting question. I mean, I think it's just about everybody's brain is different. And I think more data is good. Like I was talking to somebody yesterday about just who helps, you know, fighters, a lot of fighters with nutrition. Looking at their, you know, their blood work and helping them, you know, figure out what nutrients they need to take. And a big thing is, you know, the dehydration in the sport. And just it's a sport of like, you know, that lacks education when it comes to getting the body ready. Especially like, think about a training camp. You get this top athlete in the peak condition, and then you dehydrate him for like 7 days or 10 days in some cases, so that you can get him down and you starve him at the same time, so you can make this weight that you're not going to fight at anyways, and then 36 hours later, he balloons up 14 pounds. So you do this really ridiculous you know, physical act right before you get into a really dangerous physical act, which is fighting. And the thing that suffers the most is the brain, because it's the thing that has the most water, and it gets dehydrated first and the most. That's really the problem. And you know, the guy that covers this really well in the sport is Kieran Mulvaney. He's done extensive stuff for ESPN about this clinic. I think Jesse Magdaleno and his brother Diego are enrolled in the Cleveland Clinic and have been for years. It's basically a study of their brain. They keep the data. It's almost like the biopassport like they do in cycling, only it's information about the brain where they track you fight to fight over the years. And when you get to a certain point, you'll be able to better tell when to pull the plug, so to speak.
All right, guys, listen, we are basically out of time. Alex, thank you for the call. Join us again soon.
Hey, thanks a lot. Love the show.
Absolutely. Thanks. All right, so that's it for this week's edition. Gabe, we actually got 90 minutes in. We made a dollar out of a dime and a nickel.
Yeah, but we couldn't have done it without the callers. There's so many people. Sorry to the people that we left on the line. We'll get you next week. But, yeah, man, that was actually the Haymon edition. But it was good stuff.
All right, so that's it. On behalf of Gabriel Montoya, Dave Duenez, this is the next round on the Leave It in the Ring Radio Network.